I'll call the Education Finance Committee to order. And let's see, how about Representative Murphy, would you like to move the minutes for today's meeting or yesterday's meeting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of the minutes as printed.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the minutes? All right, seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the minutes for the March 25th meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you very much, Representative.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I wish to be excused for about 20 minutes at 1 o'clock or 1:15, and Representative Mariani is going to be my deputy in my absence.
Good choice, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, but before I go and before the meeting starts with the bills, could you give us an idea of where we're going after the break?
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and I appreciate the question. We're still kind of formulating definite timelines on when we need to get a bill through the committee and then on to the next for the process of getting the House floor with an omnibus finance bill. But it's my expectation from where things are right now that the week we get back from break, we will be busy hearing. I want to try to wrap up that week hearing any bills we still need to hear. I know innovation and policy has been busy, and some new bills have been referred to us, and getting those on the calendar. If members still have bills and you're waiting, they have not been scheduled yet, and you definitely want them heard, please let me or Mr. Withers know. And so I would expect it to be a very busy week with hearings, possibly going into the evening the week after break. And then we'll probably the week after, if we have a couple of things that straggle over into that week, we'll clean that up, but starting to work on putting a bill together. That's as much direction as I have right now. But that's what I can tell you.
Madam Chair,
if I have more information, I'll certainly pass it along to you as soon as I have it.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I really appreciate that we have similar views on that break means break.
Yes.
And that we don't have to sit and do homework throughout the our empty days, supposedly empty days, because I know everyone here has plans of one kind or another that they have made and appreciate no interference with them. I also appreciate, Madam Chair, the brief conversation that we had today before the meeting, and that I expressed my condolences about the target. And I think everybody on this committee probably feels pretty much the same way, that it wasn't what we expected. But we are here to finish the year, get down to work when we come back, and make the best possible solution-driven proposal for the students and the families of the state of Minnesota, with the best decisions possible for educational finance issues. And we are going to aggressively pursue our philosophies of what's important in establishing priorities in the weeks to come. And we feel that we have to offer a balanced, priority-driven solution with the best possible outcome for the students and families of the public schools in Minnesota and all schools' children, but especially for the public school children. So we look forward to having a break and then rolling up our sleeves, and we'll be in our new spring clothes and all, and ready to get down and go forth.
Thank you.
And I hope by that time, Madam Chair, that the details are worked out. And I understand Mr. Withers is going to work every day. So then we know that the details will be worked out and we'll have more positive things to work with, because we'll know the answers to some of the questions. What are our boundaries? Where are we going? And if there's any new money coming in. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And I very much appreciated your words and our conversation today, and I know we'll have many more. And I think you can safely say that I echo many of the sentiments that you have shared with us today. And yes, our target is going to be a challenge. There's no question about it. But I am looking forward to having a very good dialogue and seeking the input of every single member of this committee, because I think we all have something very positive and helpful to contribute to that effort. We are legislators. We are not strangers to making difficult decisions. And so we will keep our focus on doing what's best for all school children, and in particular public school children. That is our mission. And but I think we will all look forward to a little break. As I shared with you, I need time to just kind of think about things and process things, and that will be a nice time for us to do that. And yes, our wonderful staff will be here working, and I think I was going to do this at the end, but maybe appropriate now just to offer a heartfelt thanks for myself, but the entire committee, that all of them, I know Mr. Withers in particular is here many hours before I get here in the morning, because he's an early bird, and he's usually here even after I go home at night, and I stay here fairly late. So, but for all of our staff, our nonpartisan staff, and both the partisan staffers that work for the committee and our committee pages, Ben and Simon, I just want to offer a thank you for all of your hard work. This place doesn't run without you, so thank you for everything you do. So, all right. Well, with that, I think we'll go ahead and get going and try to get through our agenda today so everybody can move on and into break feeling like we got some bills off our plate. So, Representative Gunther, if you're ready to go. Welcome, Representative Gunther.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Afternoon,
or I guess it is afternoon. This is kind of a bridge time for me. I get it. Well, I'm going to go ahead and move your bill so it's formally in front of us. So we are, I would move that House File 809 be referred to the Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee. And with that, I know that there is an author's amendment that is should be in your packets. But Representative Gunther, would you prefer to tell us a little bit about the bill or just start with the amendment?
I would love to. I want to thank the Education Policy Committee for bringing up the things that I thought were done in my bill that weren't. And I appreciate their good input. And we took that input and we put it in an amendment, the A1 amendment. House File 809 is a bill that was drafted as a result of recommendations by the bipartisan Senate Rural Task Force that met in the interim. The task force identified the need to ensure employers have workers they need by identifying and aligning employment and training efforts for adult career planning and counseling of youth. Now, one thing I want you to firmly know, that we are not in any way trying to replace high school counselors. Dr. Walter Roberts from Mankato firmly endorses this program, and I hope someday this program is not needed and that we have enough career counselors to truly act like career counselors instead of crisis counselors. And with that, I have Ann Kilser, who is here to address the amendment and amend this bill so it has got the things that the Education Policy Committee recommended that we have in it.
Thank you. Would you like to go ahead and offer your testimony?
Sure. Madam Chair and members, my name is Ann Kilzer. I'm the director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association. There are 16 workforce service areas across the state that provide services in workforce centers. There are 48 workforce centers across the state. And the purpose of this bill would basically do three things. First, it would allow for funding for, and I apologize, I left my written testimony behind. You can appreciate that at this point of this week, I think, so bear with me. The first purpose of the bill is for career guided pathway counselors who would look at programs across the broader workforce development system from K-12 to adult basic education, MINSCU programs, as well as those offered in the workforce centers to ensure that there's alignment among those programs and that resources are being leveraged. The bill would provide funding for 9 counselors or career pathway coordinators across the 16 workforce service areas. So they'd be working within a service area as well as across service areas, sharing best practices and ensuring alignment of resources. The second piece of the bill provides funding for the Minnesota Youth Employment Program. That would allow us to do two things. First, it allows our youth counselors to work with students and youth up to age 24 in workforce centers, providing career counseling activities, assessments, and also employment opportunities. It would also allow us to take statewide a pilot project that was funded by the legislature in the last biennium. There were 4 pilot projects where workforce service areas were actually asked to partner with school districts to provide career counseling and the other activities that are normally provided in the workforce centers in the schools, to work with students one-on-one to help implement career plans and career advising, as well as to provide labor market information and information about what opportunities for employment are available in the service area, as well as what types of skills are needed to take advantage of those opportunities, whether it's something that requires a 4-year degree or a 2-year degree, to ensure that students know what employers in their areas are looking for if they choose to want to stay in their communities after high school graduation, and to be prepared for those opportunities. The amendment that Representative Gunther has brought forward, there were concerns in previous committees that the funding for the career pathway coordinators was only for rural areas. As Representative Gunther mentioned, this bill initially came out of the Senate Rural Task Force. The amendment would make the funding for the coordinators statewide so that every workforce service area across the state would have access to those positions. And then it also changes anywhere the word counseling is used to advising to ensure, as Representative Gunther said, that the intention is for these positions to support what counselors and schools are doing and not to supplant their activities or their positions. And I'm happy to take any questions that folks may have for either of us.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier or for Representative Gunther at this point? All right, Representative Gunther, why don't we go ahead and move your amendment and get that on the bill to get it in the shape that you would like.
I would appreciate that.
And I think Ms. Kilzer did a good job of explaining what the change is. So with that, any questions from members on the A1 amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, amendment is adopted, so your bill has been amended for your request, Representative Gunther.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a perennial question of mine, I think. Who is carrying this cost? I trust, given the motion, that it is not this committee, but I'd like to clarify.
Yes, Representative Dabney, that is correct. It would be in the jurisdiction of the jobs and that long name committee that Representative Garofalo is chairing. The money would come from his committee's jurisdiction, but again, kind of what I've tried to do is make sure that we're hearing things that have an impact on our educational system, and so that's why we're hearing this today.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you for doing that, because you should protect the jurisdiction of this committee, and that's right and proper, and I appreciate and value that as well. I guess my awkward question for Representative Gunther, first of all, thank you for the deletion of the limitation of this to rural only rural students. The value that this, the potential value of this program is valued whether you're living in my district or your district. So I appreciate that. But if I understand House GOP budget targets correctly, the jobs area is taking a, from memory, 23.5% cut from current biennium spending, and probably greater than that from the base. So how do you get this funded even when you just cut the funding significantly with the amendment?
Well,
Representative Gunther.
Madam Chairman, Representative Dabney, like every year, you have to deal with what you get. And you have to hope that your partner across the street, called the Senate, have more creative ways of funding things than we do, perhaps. You have to hope that there are things that were one-time funding, such as broadband and several other things. The governor was very generous last biennium to economic development. So you take one-time funding out of the bill, and you're only $50 million behind what we were last year, or very significantly close to the base. So it looks devastating when you look back at history for jobs and economic development. It is fairly close. We have to be a little creative to get any new program in, and we have to look at how we funded programs that were perhaps not using the money they were given. And you have to trim them, and hopefully you get enough money to get the things that the committee as well as the state needs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hopefully the Senate can come through for House provisions.
Madam Chairman?
Thank you.
Representative,
they have in the past.
Okay. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Dabney, I think you know that Representative Gunther is a grocer, and he's used to dealing with small margins and being really creative. But Representative Gunther, I do appreciate you bringing this forward, and I'm just assuming, Madam Chair, although I'd like to hope that the bill I had for counselors would be included in the budget, that it's going to be very difficult to have that in there. So I think this is a good way to move forward. And I know you have ways of finding money in the jobs bill. So thank you.
Other questions? All right. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify on House Bill 809?
Yes. Oh, and sorry, I'm sorry, Ms. Madam Chair. I failed to mention there were two handouts that were relative to this bill, and the handouts I brought are specifically geared towards the piece of the bill that would be of most interest to this committee, and that's the outreach to schools piece. There's a progress report on the four pilot projects that were funded 2 years ago and what the outcomes of that project are. It's called the Higher Education Career Advisors Pilot Progress Report. And then there's also a piece of paper from Northeast Career Adventure, and that is one of the four pilot projects that we're hoping to model statewide, and it kind of gives you a menu of services that the Workforce Center in Northeast Minnesota is offering to their school districts. Just to give you an idea of the types of services that we'd be able to provide if this funding were appropriated statewide.
Thank you. I appreciate you drawing your attention to that. Any other questions? All right. Final comments, Representative Gunther.
Well, I hope this bill helps with those students that are non-secondary education-bound students get some direction for jobs by doing ability, aptitude, and interest testing, so we can truly develop the best workforce in the nation. And we are short of workers, and it's going to be increasingly desperately short of trained workers. And that's why I entertain that we're going to spend the money from my scarce resources instead of money from yours.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. We appreciate that. And I like your bill. I think this is a good proposal. So. With that, if there's no other questions from the committee, I would renew my motion that House File 809, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance. And so all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Representative Gunther, your bill is on its way. Thank you. All right. Representative Detmer.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I just... maybe a question, maybe some of the other members of the committee could, how many schools still have that on-job training where they're in school, like their senior year, they're in school for half a year, and then there's a staff person that gets them out in the community and find them jobs. Is that still going on statewide?
Service learning.
That's a good question. Let me ask Mr. Strom if he knows. Okay. We'll have to get back to you on that. As I don't know, and Mr. Strom, more importantly, does not have that information.
You mean so. I finally phoned one question that Mr.
You
Strom can't answer.
You have stumped the nonpartisan question. So, all right, we'll do a little research on that and get back to you after the break. All right, thank you, Representative Dummer. Representative Anderson, are you ready to go? All right. Yep, Representative Anderson, would you like to go ahead and move your bill? And your motion is to re-refer to Ways and Means, but it is the Chair's intent to lay it over today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 880 and talk a bit about it for the committee today.
Very
thank
good.
You, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Please go ahead.
We have a teacher shortage in the area of agriculture education, and the university graduates 13 to 15 students a year in the program, and a lot of those students are looked at by private industry with a higher salary, for example, and we don't get all of those kids, students, to go into teaching. And this bill is an attempt to offer an incentive to those graduates from our university ag education teaching program, fairly modest, up to a $3,000 per year loan forgiveness, and for a period of not more than 5 years, as an incentive to get more of our university graduates in this field to stay in the teaching education field. And we have shortages. This past year, about 7 or 8 programs were not able to find qualified teachers. There's about 35 openings a year, and the university graduates, again, that 15-student neighborhood, and some of those choose to go into private industry. So this bill is an attempt to offer an incentive to get more of them to stay in the teaching field. And, Madam Chair, I have a testifier who would like to address some of the specifics of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy, did you have a question right now?
Well, Madam Chair, I was just wondering whether the $3,000, is that coming out of our target or out of the Office of Higher Education target or out of higher education target?
Representative Murphy, out of the Higher Education Committee's target. All right. Representative Anderson, if you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
And Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, and I'd just like to give you a little context of who they are and the scope of the agricultural educators in the state. There are about 240 teachers in the state that are in ag education. They are primarily in more rural areas, but there are a number of people in urban areas, and I'd just like to share that briefly with you because a lot of people do think of it as just a rural phenomenon. We have, for instance, 3 teachers at the Academy for Science and Agriculture at Van Nuys Heights. There's 7 teachers at Anoka Hennepin School District. There's 1 teacher at White Bear Lake, 1 at Southwest Metro, 1 at the School for Environmental Studies in Apple Valley, St. Paul Gordon Parks Alternative Learning Center, 2 instructors at St. Paul Humboldt, 2 at St. Paul Highland Park, Forest Lake has 3, Fridley has 1, Rockford has 2, Stillwater has 2. The only reason I'm pointing this out, and there are a few more, but just point out to you that many of you are from more urban areas of the state, and this is an area that's expanding in those areas as well. And there are a lot of job openings and so forth in agribusiness and those kinds of areas, and so it's an area that's increasing. In almost all career and technical education areas, we've actually found a lot of decreases over the last number of years. But in agricultural education, we've actually found increased demand. But unfortunately, we do have about 6 to 7 a year that are unfulfilled in terms of finding an instructor, and so therefore the programs are closed. And yet, having said that, we did add 9.9 new FTEs last year in terms of ag education in the state. So it's a growing area. One of the other things that it does offer, partly because of what this legislature has done in the past in terms of upgrading curriculums and so forth, it provides an opportunity as an ag education to provide through agri-science credits in the high school and also economics credits in some cases. And so because of that, these instructors have become better qualified and also more in demand. And as was indicated by Representative Anderson, we do have significant shortages, and this bill would help us not only with trying to get more of the students to stay in ag education in terms of entry level, but also in terms of retention. The typical salary level that is available to these students in this with this kind of a degree in private business oftentimes $50,000 to $55,000, and as most of you know that work in education, you're significantly lower than that. And so that's one of the reasons that we have this bill before you. I think it's kind of we're kind of the warm-up band for the next bill, I think, that you've got with all features. So.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a co-author on this bill, and I know teaching 34 years at Forest Lake, our ag and FFA program at Forest Lake is one of the top in the state, and if not in the country. And I know there's the one family, the Muron family, have two ag instructors in our district, plus a total of, I think, three teachers out of that family. But I know that this is one of the big priorities for this issue, and I know back in 73 when I graduated from college, there was a loan repayment program like that for those that went into education. I took advantage of that and, of course, spent 34 years in education, but that helped me with my loans. So I think this would be a good incentive for those that are considering whether to go into the education or go into businesses. Maybe we can keep some of our top people in education. So I really support this.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the intent behind the bill. We are, as I think the author indicated, perhaps it was the testifier, we're running into teacher shortages in a number of areas, and ag is one of those. When I was teaching in Buffalo, they got a new agriculture teacher who seemed to be quite good. I don't know if he's still there. The testifier may know. But that holiday season, the ag students sold boxes of citrus fruit as a fundraiser, and I thought, dang, that guy's good. If he can get them growing grapefruits and oranges in Minnesota, that's impressive.
We can do marijuana, we can do that.
For the record, that was Representative Hertas.
I'm just going to pretend we didn't hear that.
Yeah. We're moving on, Madam Chair. My question is, page 1, line 23, providing this program to private school ag teachers. Normally, we focus our support on public schools. Maybe to the gentleman testifying, how many private schools offer ag education? And when you look across the state at either ag programs that are closing because they can't find someone, are reducing their offerings because they can't find someone, or are using a community expert exception because they can't find a licensed teacher, how many of those are in public schools versus private schools?
Representative Dabney, I was the head of this committee one time a few years ago, and you asked me a question when we were talking about agri-science, you specifically. And when I came back with my answers, you said, well, at least I'm not supporting your bill, but I like the fact that you've done your homework. And Representative Dabney, you just caught me. Because I have to say that this bill was drafted by Representative Anderson, not myself. Mm-hmm. But we did support it and talk to him about it. And I have to be honest with you, I'm not aware of a private school that is. So it is in the language. If you would like to take it out, it wouldn't bother me a bit, because I'm not aware that that's the case. These are public and charter schools. We do have Van Nuys Heights Charter School.
Madam Chair, to both the gentlemen, actually, I think you and I are batting 500. because you've come up over the years with two significant moves, and the first one I opposed, and I think the second one I supported.
Okay.
So probably because you did your homework. I'll defer to the author, but it just did strike me as odd, and when I find out that there are no private schools offering egg education, then it definitely strikes me as odd. 95% of students in Minnesota go to public schools, whether they're traditional publics or charters, and it seems like you got 95 to 5. We should focus our resources on where we get the greatest impact. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, did you
Yeah, that's a very good point, Representative Dabney, and we'll certainly change that, delete that line, because as Mr. Schoenfeld said, I'm not aware of any private schools either that offer ag education. But our main focus is our public schools, our charter schools, and to get enough teachers in the field to teach those that really want and need the ag education. So thank you for that point.
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, my question really is, why are you going? It seems like a small amount. And I say that because I think I'm the only one here that's on the, no, Representative Christensen is also on the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. And we were looking at bills that will provide rebates for student loans anywhere from $20,000 up to $100,000 if people would work in rural areas. $100,000 would be for doctors and dentists and that sort of thing. But for our entry-level nurses, I think the loan amount, perhaps Representative Christensen can help me, but I think it was about $20,000. And for RPNs, it was like $40,000 in loan refunds in return for a three-year commitment to work. And I support your bill, but I just think that the amounts could be more in order to get those people who would otherwise go into a $55,000 job to actually go into education.
Any comment, Representative Anderson?
Well, I would certainly entertain a motion to increase it, but I was just trying to be realistic, Madam Chair, and get this back on the ground again started. And I agree that, you know, $3,000 a year isn't a huge part of a whatever $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a year college education. But I'm also realistic that we may not get any more than that. So it was an option that would at least show students that we are understanding of their plights and that would try to help in some way.
Thank you, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, I do support this bill. This is my third look at it. I serve on your committee, and we heard wonderful testimony. Not wonderful. We heard important testimony about the importance to our states, our state, particularly our agricultural sector, on the issue of making sure that our younger generations are properly being prepared to take up the mantle of keeping that sector going and strong in our state. And Representative Dabney, this is my third time look at it, so I'm actually really embarrassed because I didn't think about the private school component here. So it just goes to show you, you know, several pairs of eyes, you know, constantly on all bills. A couple of things. One is, and I won't pose this as a question, just more as a quick statement, Madam Chair. One is the obvious, you know, continual tension here about, so we're going to carry this in our account. You know, what does that mean relative to the rest of our obligations in funding our K-12 system? Obviously, we have a small number here, probably under any scenario, you know, doable. But nonetheless, you know, there's a number of these, you know, that we've been considering carefully. And so that question will increasingly, you know, become a tense and probably tough question among all of us. Having said that, I do have a bill, and it's a loan forgiveness bill. It's targeted for a different group of potential teachers, and this has to do with the lack of diversity in our teaching corps in the state of Minnesota, where, you know, we've been stuck at basically the same percentage for over 20 years. You know, 4% of our teaching corps 20 years ago were teachers of color. You know, this year it's 4% of our teaching corps are teacher of color. And so, Madam Chair, I haven't had the chance to have the personal conversation with you, but I hope we can take a look at that bill and have a good conversation about the wisdom of investing in that sector as well, or in that community as well, to be able to meet these really, truly shortage issues. But Representative Anderson, it's a really good bill, and I want to thank you, Representative Schoenfeld. I don't know if a lot of members here know that you served in this body augustly many years ago, and you've been a very consistent champion for rural Minnesota agricultural issues, which, as you properly indicated nowadays, are not just rural Minnesota issues. My own local high school now has a very active agricultural focus student group and coursework offering as more and more urban folks look to advance this 21st century idea of urban farming as well. So this issue is indeed an important issue for the entire state. I want to thank you for your vision in promoting that. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kenney. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, the loan forgiveness program, is that those that are going to be graduating, or is it those that are currently teaching, that might have been teaching for a few years, are still paying on their loans? Does it apply to those teachers too?
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, it's really pretty totally dependent upon the breadth or how wide the net is relative to the finances. If you read the bill, there is provision in there that says that the commissioner can make determinations as to the eligibility and so forth. And at this point in time, we have a vision, and I guess there's two different ways to look at that. In terms of retention, it might be wise to try and provide these funds for people that are already in education, maybe in their first 5 years as an example, in terms of promoting, bringing new people in, and then retaining them, it would be new people coming out. So it really would be totally dependent upon what you as a legislator would decide, or legislature would decide, in terms of how much funding to put towards this and how broad that might be. And we're open to that discussion.
Thank you.
But I would say, Madam Chair, that first of all, we would certainly like to see it for those that are graduating and moving forward, because they have the biggest burden at this time.
Additional questions? All right. And was there anyone from the audience who wished to testify on House Bill 880? All right. Seeing none. And just to clarify for members, you know, this the appropriation is, as the bill is drafted, it would come from higher education, and they have already heard the bill. But it's been our tradition this year. We want to hear anything that may affect our E-12 educational program. So that's why we're hearing it. And with that, final comments, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the comments from some of the Metro colleagues here. It really shows that I think we understand the importance of agriculture, and I really appreciate that. And I would just add quickly that in our Ag Committee, I think it was St. Paul Highland Park, the FFA chapter from St. Paul Highland Park came, and a couple, three folks testified, and the enthusiasm and what they felt about what FFA had done for them just kind of warmed your heart. And if we could spread that around to more kids all over the state, that would make my day. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I concur. I am a farm kid. I grew up on a small farm, and FFA was a big part of our community, and I had an opportunity to meet with some students, FFA student leaders, and not just agriculture. That is one of the best student leadership training organizations that exists in our nation. So outstanding students, and I was really proud to have a chance to talk with them. So. With that, Representative Anderson renews his motion that 880 be referred to Ways and Means, but the intention of laying it over today. So thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, just a clarification issue for me. So if the intent is to have this be resourced from the higher ed, committee, why is our motion to refer to Ways and Means and with the intention to lay it over? Does that mean lay it over back to us, or I'm just not clear what that means.
Representative Mariani, we are just holding the physical bill in our possession, but they have already heard the bill, and everything, as you know, of a finance nature has to go through Ways and Means. So procedurally, that's the way we're handling it.
So then, Madam Chair, the laying over part, let me ask it this way. So will this bill eventually from Ways and Means then move to higher ed? Is that what's going to happen?
No, the bill has already been heard in higher ed. It went there first, and then is it traveled here just so we could, as I said, have a hearing and understand the proposal that Representative Anderson's brought forward that may have an impact on agricultural education in our schools.
Okay, I think I get it. I just want to make sure that we're not doing it inadvertently where we're expected to carry this account if in fact that is the case.
No, Representative Mariani.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Norris.
I just had a suggestion while we're away on a little break. Maybe the people could find, who maintain the building, could find some WD-40. We got some very squeaky chairs.
Representative Norris, you're reading my mind. In fact, the pages will know that I have mentioned the squeaky chairs. It's a particular pet peeve of mine. And so, yes, we will be addressing that over the break. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would recommend new chairs.
Waste, not in the
tarts. Yeah, I was just saying. I'm not sure, but I think I have a good shot at the WD-40, so we'll try that first.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kwong.
I think they bought a bunch of new ones for that building that they're putting up over there. We could maybe use them in the interim.
All right, and with that, we're going to veer back on to the road of Representative Bennett's bill. And,
they can have our chairs.
Representative Bennett's bill is an informational hearing because the bill is not, it's in higher ed and has not been re-referred to us yet. So this is an informational purpose. But again, another good proposal that I thought the committee members should hear about. So with that, Representative Bennett, if you want to talk to us about House File 1170.
I will do that. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 1170 is another teacher loan, or it's a loan forgiveness program. It is targeted at getting teachers in those licensed areas that we've all heard about in our committee and in ed policy, where we are seeing shortages throughout our state. And a number of those positions are in special ed, but they're also math, school psychologists, and other areas. So this would direct the commissioner of the Office of Higher Education to establish a teacher shortage loan forgiveness program, directs the education commissioner and to use the annual teacher supply and demand report, which is already produced by Minnesota Department of Education, and they would utilize that to find out which areas of licensure shortage that we are experiencing, and also we are also targeting some greater Minnesota cities schools that are finding teacher shortages in all areas. So it is also asking them to look at the I can't find the spot right here, but it's listed as economic development regions. There we go. So we're looking at shortages for teachers there as well, and trying to help with that. So this would provide a loan forgiveness for up to 5 years, and if a teacher teaches in one of these shortage fields or geographic areas, they would be able to ask for a specified amount, which has not been specified yet. I'm going to leave that up to the higher ed committee and that chair to pay towards part of their their teacher loan. And one thing, we had a great question come up. It was actually Representative Winkler that asked it in the Higher Ed Committee, and he said, is there any proof that these teacher loan forgiveness programs work? And I guess I just assumed that it was proven because we've been doing this for many, many years as a legislature. But I think that was a good question. So I asked actually one of my testifiers here if she would look that up, and we did find some information. The Minnesota Department of Health has been doing loan forgiveness programs way back since 1990, and they had a 2007 study that I won't go into all the details, but it found that it was very effective in both recruiting the fields they were targeting, as well as those people were remaining in those areas. So it has been shown that these are effective in targeting shortage areas, whatever it is. So with that, I do have a couple of testifiers. I'll testify briefly.
Thank you, Representative Bennett, and welcome to our testifiers. If you please just state your name for the record.
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Snezhana Besanov, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all locally elected school board members across the state, and we want to thank Representative Bennett for bringing forward this proposal, as well as many of you here who are co-authors on it, so thank you for that. We believe that is that House File 1170 is just one of the way of addressing this growing issue of teacher shortage in Minnesota. It'll encourage teacher candidates, as well as teachers who are current teachers, to acquire licenses and work in designated teacher shortage areas. I'll try to be very brief. MSBA has a grassroots member-driven approach, and as if we have asked our members to see what some of the things are important to them in developing a platform. We had two resolutions that were passed that specifically talked about this and getting more teachers and making sure that we have highly qualified teachers in our classrooms. During that process, as we've traveled across the states, we've had a number of school district leaders talking about how hard it is to hire and retain highly qualified teachers. And four areas of concern stood out. That was teacher shortage, decrease in applicants across the state, losing good candidates to other states and districts, as well as turning away or terminating highly qualified teachers due to licensure obstacles. We've also heard how specifically one district reported in the rural Minnesota saying that they used to get hundreds of applications for areas like elementary education, but now that most recently they received only 11 applications for 5 openings. So a big difference from what they've seen before. Also, the Minnesota Department of Education puts out teacher supply and demand report, and a 2015 report has similar, noticed the similar things, that there's teacher shortage across the state. One of the findings is that while specific teacher licensure areas continue to be the same, the percentage of districts indicating that it's difficult or impossible to hire highly qualified teachers has doubled since their 2012 survey. Teacher shortage in Minnesota has also gotten the attention of the U.S. federal government, and for your information, you have on your desks a letter from U.S. Department of Education, the Office of Post-Secondary Education, that states there are 27 licensure areas of shortage in Minnesota, and 9 of them specifically are areas of special education. And just to give you a little bit a different way to look at it is that in 1990 to 1992, when they surveyed in Minnesota, we had about 3 areas of shortage, teacher shortage, and now we have 27, and that really started to grow since 2005. So again, Minnesota is experiencing teacher shortage in some licensure areas in many parts of the state, and we believe that this bill is one way of addressing this issue. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Joe Gould with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We'd like to thank Representative Bennett and the co-authors of the bill for bringing this forward this year. And we'd echo a lot of the same comments as MSBA. $30,000 is the average debt amount for college student graduate in Minnesota, and our teachers are not immune from that. This bill would help plug some holes in the federal student loan program that exists, and we are experiencing a silent teacher crisis across rural Minnesota, and we need help recruiting and incentivizing teachers to go into the field, and we feel that this would definitely help address that. Our superintendents have told us time and time again that they're experiencing hiring difficulties in all subject areas and all licensure areas, and we especially appreciate the provisions related to including the economic development regions throughout the state that MBE has identified as geographic shortage areas. So with that, appreciate your support for the bill.
Thank you. Did you have any additional testifiers, Representative Bennett?
Madam Chair, no, that would be it.
All right. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who might have this information. Over the years, I've heard that there are a fair amount of licensed teachers that are not in the classroom position. There are other areas of employment by districts. Is there any way of finding out how many licensed teachers are non-classroom? And just understanding of what percentage of the employee population for the school systems.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, 0-2 today. I'll check in with the department and see what we can get for you, Representative Quam.
So much for your break, Mr. Strom.
That's right.
Keeping you busy. All right. Well. All right. It looks like we have the assistant commissioner who would like to make a comment or offer some words about the bill.
Hi,
please
good
welcome.
Afternoon. My name is Wayne Nguyen. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Department of Education. I don't know if we can get directly at what you're asking for, but we do have a system that does track the number of licensed teachers or teachers who hold licenses in the state and people who are in the classroom. So I think we could probably get you something that will get at what you're asking for.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Did you have any comments that you wanted to make on the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just also wanted to mention that as part of the governor's supplemental budget, he has also included a forgivable loan program within his budget. We are working on finalizing the language right now, and we'll hope to get that to the committee as soon as we can. But it really does dovetail with a lot of the bills that we've heard today, where we really are trying to address the teacher shortage areas and the high need areas, too, so in rural Minnesota and kind of our more focused and priority schools. So we look forward to working with all the members on this proposal.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate that. All right. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question would be also for the department, so Ms. Nguyen can come back.
I'm sorry.
But it's also for MSBA, so if they can stay at the table. And if anyone else pops up, I'll bring them into
the All right.
So, I just figured, Madam Chair, I'll take advantage of the opportunity here relative to my prior comment. And that has to do with the lack of diversity in our teaching corps. So you heard what I described earlier, where, frankly, the needle has not moved on that in 20 years in our state. And yet, during that same period of time, the needle certainly moved a heck of a lot when it came to the diversity of our student body, particularly in greater Minnesota. My school district of St. Paul, you know, I've been there for quite a while, but quite frankly, the big dynamic is happening outside of the Twin Cities. Anyway, the point is that there really is a statewide issue here relative to teachers of color in our state. I like all these programs that are coming forward. And so shortage is one way to look at that issue. A very specified area like agriculture is another. But what about this issue? The research is constantly emerging about the importance of having a diverse teaching corps relative to a diverse student body. So what is the position or the thoughts of the School Board Association and also the department and the governor relative to this issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, as part of the governor's teacher workforce package, there are a few different proposals within his $25 million proposal, are two programs. So the forgivable loan program, which would have an emphasis on diversifying the teacher workforce as one of the eligibilities for being able to get a loan. And then there's another program that the governor and the commissioner are proposing. We are calling it Stepping Up for Kids, which would provide grants to paraprofessionals who are currently teaching in our districts now, I think similar to what you are proposing, where we know that these individuals, they want to be in the classroom, they want to teach children, and for some reason or another, we're not able to get their teacher's license. So we think that that will be one more way of diversifying the teacher workforce.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, yes, MSBA is very much aware of this, and we are very concerned about this as well, having just enough teacher, not enough, but really having the representation of teachers of color and different ethnicities in the classroom for our kids. That has come up, and we've talked about that specifically at Delegate Assembly, and we've talked, we have two proposals that have been going through on teacher licensure, so this is one of them, and teacher shortage, and the other one would help with the licensure issues to really create more flexibility there so that we would be able to see the influx of teachers of color come through. And I know as we were working on this proposal, Representative Bennett, Education Minnesota and MSBA have talked about that, if there's any way we can include some of the language, but we haven't been able to figure it out how that could be included here. So very much supportive of it.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Bessonoff. Did I pronounce it correctly? Is it Bessonoff?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Other questions? And did I see someone else coming down that wanted to testify? I'm sorry, you were kind of midway through, and then we launched into a question. Welcome.
Welcome. My name is Paul Winkle. I work for Education Minnesota, and I appreciate the bills around loan forgiveness. It's a great way to get teachers into the profession. We also need, as Representative Mariani said, a real push to get teachers of color into our kids' classrooms. I believe about 38% of our kids in the state of Minnesota are now kids of color, and that's all throughout the state. And I know there's been a lot of effort around licensure and these other programs to get more teachers into the classroom, but I really want everybody to understand how retention of teachers is really the ultimate cause of this shortage. Not only people are not going into this profession because of a lot of stresses put on their work in the workplace, high class sizes, special ed paperwork, the stress of the tests and the tying the tests to their employment. I told people the other day, Saturday was my seventh year where I knew I wasn't done teaching. And I can tell you the moment I was done teaching, it has to do with how much I was getting paid and how much my health insurance cost. My son fell down. I was a seven-year teacher. I taught ninth grade civics in Farmington. I made $42,000. I qualified for food stamps. And my son fell down the steps. I was making $42,000. My deductible was $4,200, and I knew I had to pay for that health insurance bill. And when my son fell down the steps, he had a big cut on his head, like that big by that wide, and a Winkler head that's sort of important. Representative Dabney would know. To get that stitches done up nicely, it cost $1,600. Wow. And when I walked into the house, I said to my wife, "Do you think we need to bring him in?" I was done teaching at that moment. I love students. But what is happening in this budget target of not enough money and our teachers starting at $36,000 on the average is the reason why we have the shortage. Yeah. It is not because our licensure standards are too high, actually, I believe. It is because there's been a fundamental attack on teachers for a long time, and the testing and the special ed paperwork and the pay and the health insurance benefits. And it all is a part of retaining these teachers and believing that they can go into a profession where they can be respected and do this important work. So I would hope, I appreciate the work. It's important loan forgiveness, student debt, it's all important. I would also ask you to focus on what's really causing this problem. So thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Yes, I have a question for Education Minnesota. What do you do, since you're our professional organization? I mean, I paid dues for 36 years. What do you do to recruit? Does Education Minnesota do anything, you know, make presentations in schools, talk to colleges? What does my professional organization do to recruit?
I don't think sorry.
Go ahead.
Representative Erickson, I don't know if we do a lot of recruitment. I know our teachers do in the classroom, and I wouldn't actually know how to measure that. But we do have a student organization where we advise and we help people in the programming area while they're in colleges to advise them and help them and answer questions. So we do that sort of work, but I don't know recruitment-wise. I know some of our school districts have programs and our local unions. St. Paul, I know, has a program. I believe Minneapolis may have a program. So I don't know every program across the state that's doing that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Education Minnesota might want to think more carefully about this, since we're in this dilemma, and you're in the business of having us join your professional organization, and I think that would be important to you. My next question is, do you provide scholarships for those who select the teaching profession? I think you have a foundation or something related in that area. Do you provide any scholarships, or do you provide any loan forgiveness opportunities for future teachers?
Mr. Winkler.
I know we have a foundation, and I'm not our foundation expert on this, but I know locals all across the state are giving scholarships to those students who they believe are entering the profession of education. So a lot of this is done not on the statewide organization level, but more on a local level where the local teachers donate money and then give scholarships out to the students that are entering in college in the profession of education.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I know my local has for years provided one or two or three scholarships, but this might be another avenue that you want to pursue. I think it really is important to a professional organization such as Education Minnesota to hold a standard for saying, you know, we want teachers, we want you high school students to consider our profession, and we're going to support you in that by doing, you know, recruitment, scholarships, figuring out retention programs. I think that would be something good for you to consider. So I look forward to a conversation with you about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to, thinking of Representative Mariani's statement and the author of the bill, as far as minority teachers in rural Minnesota, a good friend of mine is a senator from an African-American senator in Arkansas, and she said the best time of her life was teaching 2 years in Albert Lea. So, and she only went back there because she wanted her kids to grow up close to their dad that had been divorced. But then I was going to get into the testimony about why teachers are leaving, and I talked to a lot of them and read the surveys, and it's a lot of it is also the stress, and we do not have good programs for getting new teachers in. And I know at one point the university funded the high school in my district, Patrick Henry, and set up a program for working with new teachers. And then they turned it over to Minneapolis schools, and eventually they quit funding it. But during all the time that program and the people that went through the program, 93% of them stayed in teaching after 5 years, and the average is under 50% in Minnesota. But it was, and a number of teachers that got Teacher of the Year statewide from the suburbs said they had gone through that program initially. And so maybe we should be also looking at a better program for actually merging teachers in. That program, unfortunately, was dropped, and I'm told that there's nothing like that. And the university, I guess they said they put up the upfront money and then they expected us or the cities or somebody to take it over. So that might be something you should look at over the interim.
Thank you, Representative Mallory. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the conversation here about both teacher recruitment and teacher retention. I think they're both valuable dimensions, and specifically when we look at increasing the number of students of, or excuse me, teachers of color. Statewide, as Representative Mariani reminded us, 4% of the teaching corps is of color. Minneapolis, it's 16%. It's much better than the state average, but it should be, and I know that they're working to increase their outreach to teacher candidates of color and recruitment. But we should also remember what we are doing, and particularly since, Madam Chair, there's a line item in your budget for the Q program, the Collaborative Urban Educator Program. Two of those programs specifically target recruitment and training of teachers of color. One of the St. Paul private colleges, I forget which one, has long had, Concordia, thank you, Chair Erickson, has long had a program for Southeast Asian teacher candidates. I believe it was originally established working with the St. Paul district that had a significant number of Southeast Asian paraprofessionals working in their classrooms and looking to take that resource and bring them into the profession of teaching. And then just 2 years ago, we created the Somali East program, or the, excuse me, the Augsburg East program targeted at East Africans. They snuck a couple of West Africans in there, but we'll, you know, I'm okay with that. And they've got around 30 remarkable teacher candidates, both at the baccalaureate and at the master's level. I'm particularly pleased several of them are going into special education, and when you think about the incidence of autism in the Somali community and the anxiety there, to have someone who not only understands your child's diagnosis and educational needs, but understands your culture and language, that is particularly powerful. I think that as the chair looks to put together your bill under the target you've got, if we're serious about recruiting more teachers of color, we've got some successful programs that could do more with more.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers, you mentioned, you know, the entry level salary of a beginning teacher, but do you have some data on what is the average earnings of a teacher who's maybe tenured or has gone through the steps and lanes? It seems as though you know, that representation is probably not any different than a lot of professions where you have entry level wages and you work your way up the ranks. But what does a teacher who's in the middle of his career typically make? What is somebody who's fully tenured make on average? I realize every school district, but as Education Minnesota, you must be familiar with that. And then my second part of the question is, how many teachers supplement their income with other work or other opportunities when the school year is out?
Mr. Winkler.
Representative Hertas, members of the committee. I don't know every salary schedule across the state. I did look at my former alma mater, Mesabi East, the other day as I was looking through, and I know their top salary was, that's in the, I don't know if you noticed, the salary schedule was $64,000. That's the top amount of money that they were making in that district. So I think rural Minnesota looks a lot different than urban, the Twin Cities area. You know, Representative Dabney's probably at the top of the salary schedule. Joking, salary.
only here.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a range of, you know, I think around $80,000 is the top salary schedule for urban areas. And then rural areas look much differently. And your second question was, sorry. Summer. We don't have any... We don't collect data on that, but I can tell you that every year I was teaching, I was roofing houses, and I think that's very, very common for teachers to be supplementing their income doing summer programs, or teaching summer school. I think it depends on what your income is happening at the. I did construction every summer, so I think that's very typical of a lot of people I worked with.
Other questions from committee members? And is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer any comments on House File 1170? All right. We're just hearing this informationally, but Representative Bennett, is there anything, closing comments that you wish to make?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to thank the committee for listening, and I also want to say that we have many, many quality teachers in our state, so many, and it's my desire with this bill to bring even more quality teachers into our classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Bennett, and to all the testifiers. We appreciate your being with us. Representative Erickson. All right, and Representative Erickson, I'll let you choose which one you want to start with, 1762.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I'll move 1762 to be considered for inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Very well. Go ahead, and there's no amendment, so please go ahead and explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is an incentive that does not reduce funding. As you read through the bill, you'll notice that there's a new proficiency English learner that is defined, and the purpose is to encourage our public schools, our great teachers, as Representative Bennett just reminded us of, and we have many, many great teachers, and especially those who are involved in ELL, to maybe push some of their students a little bit more, and we'd like to provide this incentive. And I've spent some time reading a new book called Rewards, and how we should focus on the positive rather than the negative when it comes to learning and also teaching. So this is a great idea, I think, for us to consider, and a way for parents, I think, to have a little bit more involvement in the progress of their children in learning English as a second language. What we find is that this varies greatly in you know, classroom to classroom and school to school, but the parents who have visited me, especially Somalian parents, are a little concerned about the fact that their children come to school, for the most part, at least those who have visited with me, speaking English, but are nevertheless placed in an ELL program within the school. And that is something that has disturbed some of the Somalian parents and parents of children from other ethnicities too, that maybe their child is placed in a program and slowed down instead of speeded up in becoming more proficient in English. So I think this this proposal would give us an opportunity to take a look at that, and certainly to provide an incentive then to school districts, schools in which they could accomplish getting that child proficient in English earlier than the present required years or allowable years. And it is, I think, a great opportunity for us to, again, focus on what incentives do. And incentives, for the most part, do empower us to do, to move toward accomplishing a goal rather than not. So keeping that in mind, I think we want to focus on the positive and the incentives. And, Madam Chair, that's the bill. And I'm not sure if there's anyone here to testify for or against it, but maybe Mr. Bartholomew wants to come forward.
All right. Yes, if anyone wishes to testify on House File 1762, please go ahead and come forward. I see we have at least one. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 1762. And to save time, if it's all right, I'll combine my comments in support of House File 1763 as well. Overall, we support the concept of providing incentives and recognition for schools that are able to help their students succeed. House File 1762 is an excellent example in that it provides a balance to the existing funding formula for English as a Second Language, or ESL, services. As you know, the current funding formula provides funding to schools for as long as students receive targeted ESL services for up to 6 years. However, once a student leaves those services, the school loses the corresponding funding. House File 1762 helps eliminate this financial loss or disincentive by providing funding for students who are able to transition out of ESL services early. Similarly, House File 1763 recognizes schools for their success in helping students reach the milestone of learning Algebra 1 by the end of 8th grade. By meeting our state's 8th grade math standards, students are prepared for more challenging math in high school and will hopefully remain on track for being prepared for post-secondary education and the growing opportunities in STEM careers. It's also important to note that House File 1763's target of 8th grade math proficiency is aligned with the measures used by the Wilder Foundation's Compass Report, which you've got a copy of, and to the right it also indicates the other measures, but also what's being used by Generation Next in their 5 key indicators. So overall, there's great alignment between what House File 1763 is trying to set up as well as what's being used in the community. With that, thank you. We'd ask that you support House File 1762 and 1763 and the recognition they provide.
Thank you. And I saw a couple of puzzled looks on the members' faces. Representative, or Mr. Bartholomew, you were speaking to both bills, and one is clearly English language oriented and the other is math. So just to be clear. So thank you. Anyone else who wishes to testify? Hello, welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. I want to thank Representative Erickson. It was, at first I thought it was a change to the formula and realized after I spoke to staff that indeed it was an incentive. And I want to just say I think incentives are great. I also want to say that our school, and I don't think any school, would actually not exit an ELL kid as a result of getting more money. Our district spends about twice what we get in our ELL revenue from our general fund. So the better job we do at exiting kids out of ELL programs, we do actually have more money within our general fund to offer some of the other services that we have. And I also wanted to point out, too, that ELL learners that come to us literate in their native language are far easier to exit out of ELL. And I checked to find out, and we did have 112 kids that were exited after 1 year last year of service, because we do an assessment on every ELL kid every year, and you know the number ranges. The experience in the St. Paul Public School lately, which has been more challenging, is that we have the largest group of ELL learners that have come to us are learners that come from another country, and they have had no formal education generally in their native language. They don't have any literacy in their native language, and so you can imagine that trying to achieve the goals of exiting them early are. And many of them come to us as middle and high school students as well. So our challenge is that we are trying to do both language, literacy, and content standards all at the same time and still trying to get kids college and career ready. So I appreciate the effort on your part and the fact that it is indeed an incentive, and hope that maybe we could try and address how we can maybe provide some additional services to that group of kids that come with us without any literacy skills in any language when they arrive at our doorstep. I think that is poses the biggest challenge to us.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Any additional testifiers? All right, Representative Mariani, I think you had the question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to wrap my mind around the bill. I've only looked at it earlier. And so I just want to be real clear, because I'm looking at lines 2.26 to 2.28, where we're striking language about where we cease to generate English learner aid. And then that That then gets replaced in the following lines with a incentive approach. And then the incentive approach does, like, you know, the quicker you can get them there, the more money you can get, looks like. And then at the very end, on sub 3 at 2.33, then there's a minus involved here. And it sounds like the minus has to do with the additional, the additive money. It's not a minus to the formula. So, yeah, Mrs. John, you can see the look on my face. I'm wondering, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if Mr. Stein can just walk us through the mechanics here, because I'm the language, you know, often it's how we write bills. You know, it could be just, it could be more confusing than clear. So.
I think that's a good idea, Representative Mariani. Mr. Strom, if you would.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, the language in the bill on lines 2.26 to 2.28 that's stricken is language that should have been stricken last year. As you recall, last year not only was the length of service increased from 5 to 6 years for which funding was available, but also upon certain recommendation, English language students who passed the test, the assessment, could continue to receive services. Correct. And this language was in a separate piece of statute that was not affected last year and is in conflict with what was passed last year. So that language is being stricken to conform the bill to what happened last year. Is not connected to Representative Erickson's provision at all, but because that language is in the section that was being amended, I thought it best to take that language that's not correct out. Okay. In terms of the incentive, I perhaps should have drafted this slightly differently so that it didn't raise any concerns. The way to think about this is if they finish after 1 year, they get $1,000, after 2 years, $800, after 3 years, $600. So the maximum incentive decreases by $200 for each year that the child is in the program. But this is on top of the, as Representative Erickson said, this is on top of the existing program funding. So there's no reduction to the existing funding. There's a new incentive funding, and that phases out the longer it takes the student to finish with the English language services. So it starts at a maximum of $1,000, and after 5 years, by reducing by $200 per year, the incentive part goes away. But the underlying funding is unaffected.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and Mrs. Strom, thank you. That certainly clarifies things. And also, I feel a little chagrined because we should have caught that last year when we actually did catch this in one section of law, and apparently it existed somewhere else, and we didn't see that. I might even blame Mr. Withers because he was there with us as well. So, Madam Chair, Madam Chair, and Representative Erickson, I'll ponder this some more. I think it's admirable that we want to be able to provide more resources for schools as they work with the student population to get them where we have said we want them to be. The only caution I would, and I'll think about this a little bit more, the only caution I would add, however, is that when we did the comprehensive overhaul last year, we called it the LEAPS Act, this wasn't just simply about modernizing the delivery of ELL services as they have been delivered up to that point. This was research guided to be able to mandate, quite frankly, direct school districts to deliver those services in such a way that accomplish at least two interlocking pieces. You know, one was to be able to lift up and strengthen the home native language skills that a student has, regardless of whether it's English or not. And without getting into a long, you know, the research basically tells us if you want a student to acquire strong academic English, you know, this is an important thing to do. The other thing is that as we look at ourselves in Minnesota entering into the 21st century, it's becoming increasingly evident to all of us that Minnesota is going to be able to be relevant and successful if it's relevant and successful with a global world, a more globalized world, which is another way of saying it really behooves us, you know, to produce nothing less than multilingually competent students, whether they're originally in an ELL setting or, you know, English speakers to begin with. And so that was a really powerful framework that we were pushing, you know, inside the LEAPS Act. And then the other critical component has to do with this use of the phrase of academic English. And I guess the simple way to think about it is that we could probably conceptualize, you know, pretty quickly teaching another individual how to command basic English in order to, you know, maneuver simply through our society, you know, get from point A to point B, figure out where the stop is, you know, the next stop on the bus, you know, et cetera. But the kind of skills that we want to have in our state, and it's embedded in our world's best workforce psychology, really has to do with the use of English that goes way beyond that. And so there's actually a push toward high rigor when it comes to accomplishing English skills. And so Representative Erickson, the only thing I would caution on this is I would hate for the result of your good intention efforts to create a powerful incentive for school districts simply to focus on English language acquisition and English language acquisition at, quite honestly, the basic lowest level. That is the old ELL paradigm. And so we're trying to push toward another paradigm. And, you know, I suspect it's not your intent, Representative Erickson, but we don't really want our schools to, you know, drill students endlessly, you know, in order to quickly get them to a certain level of English proficiency. At the same time, because there's an economic incentive there, at the same time that those students fall far behind on all the other standards that we require of them, the higher order math and science standards. And that's another component of the LEAPS Act. It requires that as we move forward with these students, that they don't fall behind when it comes to grade level standards against our state standards. And so I just want to be really careful that we're not creating an economic incentive for school districts to do anything other than that. There are some other issues here. One of the things that we recognize in that bill is that these students don't come in all one size. You know, you could have a 16-year-old, as we do in St. Paul, who yesterday was in the deep jungles of Myanmar with absolutely no exposure to any kind of structured instruction, who are now, a sophomore or a junior at Humboldt High School in my neighborhood. It's going to take them longer than 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. It may well even take them well into their early adult years to get to that academic English proficiency level. And so we don't want to, I would argue that we don't want to create kind of winners and losers for school districts relative to a well-intentioned incentive program, but we don't want to create winners and losers simply because they just happen to have more students from Myanmar than they do from northern Mexico who are coming out of a structured Western English or Western academic environment. So I take the bill in the spirit that I think the author wants to offer it, but I do want to point out that there may be some unintended economic incentives here that may drive behavior in our schools that runs counter to the LEAPS Act and, frankly, runs counter to what we want to see happen in our state. So I wish, you know, we would have much more time to really do a deeper dive into this issue, but, you know, we'll find a way to do that in the coming weeks. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Any further questions from committee members? Any additional testifiers? Representative Erickson, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I want to remind members that Minnesota uses the world-class international design and assessment, WIDA, which we did enact in 2011. And if you take a look at those standards, Representative Mariani to address one of your concerns. Standard one is that they learn to communicate for social and instructional purposes first. And maybe it's not in that priority, but, you know, we have some amazing ELL teachers. I've observed them, and they follow these standards, and there are five basic standards. And I pulled up on the website of the department this morning some detailed information on the standards, looking at both formative and summative. And I if these teachers are following this, and I believe they are, and what I've observed, I think that we can rest assured that they are getting the job done, and that we're probably giving them an opportunity to move those who are accomplishing these standards faster and concentrate on those who need more help. And as I read in an article earlier, in California, as you know, they changed the law in 98, and they really concentrate on more of an immersion model. And their test scores have improved immensely because of that. Arizona did the same or similar in 2009, and Massachusetts has now moved to a more of an immersion type. They may not be truly immersion, but they are concentrating on, as one teacher said in the article, actually using the language, the better and faster the person will speak, understand, read, and write it. And I think that's one of the positives of our adoption of the WIDA standards, and the fact that the children are getting just a lot of attention in the area of moving from their native tongue to the English language. And then because we have paraprofessionals who are coming to our classrooms, our ELL classrooms, in the native tongue, the children are also advancing in that way. So I think as a state, we are doing tremendous work, and I think this incentive could provide that opportunity for our children to do even better and to close the achievement gap. And those are my closing words, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erickson. Representative Mariani, did you have a brief question? So we have two more bills to get to.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that, but this really does beg a much longer conversation. You know, the WIDA standard is a definite improvement over what we had before. But given the higher targets, the higher rigor that we've asked of ourselves, again, embedded in our world's best workforce and in our standards, what we discovered, what we know is that, you know, the WIDA standards will get us partly there, but depending on the student, remember, not all students are one size fits all, may not get us there. And that's why we did carve out that one exception that Mr. Strom shared in the finance side. For the classroom instructor to be able to make a determination that regardless of passing, quote-unquote passing, getting through a certain score on the WIDA assessment, there may well be the need to continue to have a student involved in an ELL structured environment. And that's precisely because what we're shooting for is more than just the social language. We're shooting for academic English. That is what's going to determine our ability to be successful in the 21st century or not. California and Massachusetts are English-only states. Their goal is to simply get students to learn English as quickly as possible. No one here is going to argue that our students should not have a command of English. The point, however, is that with an English-only paradigm, what we're going to do is wind up killing the home native language, which isn't good for them, isn't good for our society, and frankly, killing the pathway by which students can get to academic English levels. So, you know, there's just a ton of research about this. We spent nearly a year interacting nationally and locally with practitioners and researchers. We touched on the latest literature on this. We got advice from national thought leaders on this issue. And the more we touched with them, we connected with them, the more we realized that we really needed a whole new paradigm. And again, Representative Erickson, I'm not objecting to the incentive element here at all. I think, you know, that's a worthy approach, although, frankly, we ought to be adding the seven-year, you know, max as well on this issue. My only concern really has to do with whether or not we may not inadvertently be creating an economic incentive that runs counter to the intent that's embedded deeply in our LEAPSAC, in our redesign of our ELL instruction. And my fear is that we might. And I think that if we're going to do that, we should really have a much more careful, much more deliberate conversation about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, if I may, I'm going to weigh in on our great teachers and our parents and our students. And I think if the native tongue is to be preserved, the families will make sure that happens. And those paraprofessionals or others who speak that in our schools will also help that. But the goal is for our children to learn English. And looking at the programs in other states, I think that we can look at a great promise. So with that, I hope I can renew my motion that this would be considered for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you. And Representative Mariani, I know you want to continue to comment, and we're laying this over. So if it's in the omnibus bill, I promise you we'll have ample time to discuss it.
Madam Chair, very quickly, because Representative Erickson misspoke. It's in the law in regards to a student's home native language. And so, you know, we can express our own personal beliefs here. But I would suggest that Representative Erickson go back and revisit the LEAPS Act and discover what we have set in law in regards to home native language.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. And with that, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 1762 be re-referred to Ways and Means, but it's the Chair's intention to lay it over today for possible inclusion. And with that, House File 1763, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll move 1763 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Members, this is funding that we're going to have to decide as a committee. I just want to walk you through the changes in this House file with the addition of numeracy incentive aid. As you know, math is also an important curricular area for our students, and we have been shining and making progress in this, and so I think it's time that we do as we do in reading and reward our schools for the great work that they're doing. So in this proposal, I create a numeracy proficiency aid that is patterned much like our literacy proficiency aid, and then also add to that the numeracy growth aid that is also patterned much like our literacy aid. And I want to point to some data that I checked also on the department website when I was preparing for this to point out that when we look at the proficiency index and the proficiency index target that our schools have among our minority children, we're seeing great promise here in the movement that they're making in regard to that target. And I don't find a single minority group, our children of an ethnicity other than Caucasian or race, that is not making some strides. And I think for that, we need to be so grateful and reward that as we are doing in reading. Yesterday, we saw the printout of the literacy aid that our districts are receiving. And if we can work out a way within this committee to provide a numeracy aid in proficiency and growth, I think that we're going to serve our schools and our students and reward the great work that our teachers are doing in a way that we're doing now with reading. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
All right. Is there anyone who wishes to testify on 1763? And I know, Mr. Bartholomew, you offered testimony on both the previous
bills. Yeah, Madam Chair, the point, you know, that he was trying to emphasize is that eighth grade, unlike the literacy aid, I didn't mention this, the numeracy aid will focus on eighth grade because that's kind of our culmination point as children finish their middle years and move into high school. And so that's a really good time to recognize that accomplishment, that achievement of our students. And in that regard, I think what is happening in the Minneapolis School District, for example, shows great signs of eighth grade being that time when the use of our very robust math standards will play out in both the formative and summative testing, and we will see some real accomplishment here and focus on a different level of learning from our literacy aid. As you know, that focuses on being ready to read at the third grade level by the time they enter fourth grade. And we're seeing great improvements in that area. And now we can look forward to math as we move in the direction of that top middle grade year before they enter high school. Most of our high schools are 9-12, but if they're 7-12, it makes no difference. They still have accomplished taking Algebra 1 in the eighth grade. So I look forward to this being a great discussion, if we include this in the omnibus bill, to look to math as another incentive area as we do to reading.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any questions for Representative Erickson? All right, and I didn't see anyone else come down that wanted to testify. I'll offer one more time. All right, with that, all right, thank you.
And Madam Chair, there was a handout that I think Mr. Bartholomew provided.
That was already passed out, so members should have that.
Thank you.
All right, and with that, Representative Erickson then renews her motion, and that House File 1763 be referred to Ways and Means, but the Chair is laying it over today for
thank
possible
you.
Inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
All right, thank you. And Representative Drazkowski.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members.
Good afternoon. And Representative Drazkowski, I will go ahead and move House File 984. And we will be referring this to the Tax Committee. And with that, if you want to go ahead and explain briefly the bill, and then there is an amendment to it as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, this is a bill to repeal the state general property tax, and it repeals it over 6 years. It also includes the repeal of the student achievement levy and repeals the general property tax inflator. That's what it does, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, you had a bill in front of this committee a couple of weeks ago that accomplishes everything included in Section 1 of the bill. And I believe the amendment would be to delete Section 1 of the bill and move the rest of it to the Tax Committee. And I don't know, do we have a written amendment for that, Madam Chair?
Yes, the members should have in their packet the A1 amendment. And it is, as Representative Drazkowski described, so it would delete from this bill the action on the student achievement levy, which, again, it was a bill I carried and we heard before. And so we'd just leave the other portion, the statewide property tax levy, and that is not under the jurisdiction of this committee. So with that, any questions about the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, so the amendment has been added so that the student achievement portion has been stricken from the bill. And is there anyone who wishes to offer any testimony on the rest? Like I said, it's really not in the jurisdiction of this committee, but I'll offer it since we have it here. All right, seeing none. All right. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, then when this bill goes to the property tax division, then are the people in the property tax, the representatives in the property tax division, going to talk about how the money that comes from the property tax for schools will be used, that the schools used to get but now they won't get? How that will be used? Are you going to change all the laws or that reflect how the schools can use the property tax money?
Representative Drazkowski.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, we will talk about. We've had an informational only hearing on this bill while we're waiting for it to get to the committee, and we've talked about many of those items in terms of the history of the statewide general property tax. And at one time there was some interaction in the early 2000s related to schools. However, that is no longer the case. The statewide general property tax now simply goes directly to the state general fund. And so we will definitely have some more discussions about this and look forward to it in the division report.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I've been here long enough to know that we have went to total state funding of schools before, and then we always come back to something that comes out of property tax again. And I know that's not your intent, that something would come out of property tax again. Could you tell me how long the discussion was in your committee on that talked about the history and the what has happened with property taxes and this, especially the money going to schools?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy, I don't remember exactly how long. I would say 15 minutes, give or take. Okay.
Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, would you think that there would be at least another 15 minutes of discussion on the topic in the future when this comes back to your committee?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Murphy. I would think, Representative Murphy, that that discussion is probably most salient in your committee here. And we are looking at things that we can do in order to reduce the property tax burden on the people of Minnesota, and we're looking at this as one avenue to do that. But I really think that the future of education funding in the state is something in the purview of this committee.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I don't disagree with you, Representative Drazkowski, but right now I feel more comfortable with this committee caring and your committee caring and having some money in the game. But good luck with your discussion. And I hope it takes at least another 15 minutes.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Protest.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I serve on the Property Tax Committee, and I can make sure it lasts at least 15 minutes.
And, Madam Chair, I also serve there, so it'll be at least 15.
So that's 30. Thank you.
I do too, Madam Chair, another 15.
And, Madam Chair, the chair of this committee also serves on the Tax Committee, and everything that goes through property tax filters up to the full Tax Committee. So it'll be thoroughly vetted. We can promise you that.
So you're saying trust us.
Yes.
Madam Chair,
Representative Jessica.
And Representative Murphy, I think we're in an auction here. At almost.
It would appear so.
No more comments from me, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right. If there are, I don't see any other questions. So with that, the motion is to move House File 984 as amended to the Tax Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
All right. And with that, we are finished with the business for today.
Thank you, Madam
Members Chair, and staff, I wish you all a marvelous break and look forward to seeing you all April 10th. Thank you very much.